bayonets that would impale the runner in seconds. Luckily for the Krolut, Elzar's Sandvol was faster. He urged the dragon into a dive, and the beast opened its maw wide, ready to swallow the Nihil whole. No, not like that, girl, Elzar thought. There's been enough death. The creature's jaws snapped shut, and instead, the Sandvol skimmed low, pushing what was left of the war cloud aside with the beat of her wings. The Nihil twisted in their saddle, their eyes widening behind grease-smeared goggles as the Sandvol closed the gap. With a swing of her scaled head, the Sandvol whacked the Nihil from their perch, the now pilotless vehicle rolling straight for the Krolut. The amphibian tripped, landing in a heap of blubber, the speeder passing harmlessly over them, guided by a helpful nudge from Elzar. Nearby, the grounded Nihil watched their bike explode against a wall, and, snatching a blaster from their belt, prepared to take their revenge against the helpless Krolut. Typical bully, Elzar thought, as he brought the Sandvol back up. Too scared to pick on someone your own size. He probably shouldn't have enjoyed the dragon flicking the Nihil shooter into the air with the tip of her tail, but was sure the Force would forgive him in the long run, especially as it would be a lesson to Tai that she didn't always have to kill. But there was no sign of the Tholothian as they climbed back into the sky. In fact, the air was remarkably clear, not only of the noxious gas, but of the Nihil forces as a whole. Was the attack over? Had the tide finally turned? Elzar glanced up and realized that the answer to both questions was a definite no. Chapter 51, Fair Park, Valo. What was Pan thinking? They were still on the ground! The force of the first explosion knocked Lorna D from her feet, aggravating the injuries she had endured when that damn Jedi had thrown her through the roof. Her shoulder had been dislocated, and although she had rammed it back into place, was still raging with pain, as were the ribs that were obviously broken. The fact that she could still run was a minor miracle, as was the fact that her skull was still in one piece. The last thing she needed was to be vaporized by one of her own bloody bombs. Lorna pushed herself up, crying out as bones grated together. The plan had been clear since the beginning. The raid would end with a carpet bombing. The charges dropped from the edge of Valo's atmosphere. One final indignity. But only when her Tempest was clear. Pan! Pan! She screamed into her comlink as she forced herself on. Can you hear me? The comm came apart in her hands, damaged beyond repair in her fall. Lorna threw it aside in disgust, spotting three of her own Tempest running for cover as the bombs continued to fall.
You three, wait!
The Nihil brought their weapons up, surprised by her shout. The largest of the trio, a maskless Alzarian with scales the color of pus, unleashing his flamethrower in her direction. Lorna leapt over the stream of ignited conflagrine, the pain in her shoulder almost worth it for the satisfaction of loosening the reptilian's jaw with the heel of her boot. If the other two Nihil didn't recognize her without her mask, they sure as hell recognized the brutality of the kick. The Alzarian thudded to the ground, blood gushing from his ruined mouth. Lorna reached down and snatched two of the syringes that were strung through the idiot's bandolier. The first, she punched into her own arm. The second, she slammed into the Alzarian's broad back. He may have provoked her wrath, but she still needed the horned brute on his feet, even with a jaw that was hanging loose.
You have a ship nearby?
She barked at the two Nihil, who could still talk. A bear of a human, wielding a large plasmol, and a female Weequay, who glared at Lorna with venom.
Well?
The Weequay pointed at a junker, on the other side of the debris-strewn park. It was ugly, but it would do until Lorna got back to her own cruiser. For now, though, Lorna wasn't looking at the ship. She was looking at what was in front of it. Who was in front of it? In all her finery. Suddenly, the indignity Lorna had suffered at the hands of the idiot Jedi in the containment suit seemed worth it. Even the bombs seemed easier to forgive. Here was her prize. Lorna held out her hand for the plasmol, not expecting to have to ask. To his credit, the human handed over his weapon without question, flexing his knuckles in anticipation of the fight ahead. Lorna tested the maul's weight, activating the energy field that covered the hammer's blunt heel. Yes, that would do nicely. Her course set, Lorna D broke into a run. 4 simple words reverberating around her head. Death to the Chancellor. Chapter 52, The Unity Arc. The bombs had been a surprise that even the Force hadn't warned them about.
Ragasa, we must get you away from here,
Merrimus told his queen, who was helping Madame Consera carry a wounded Forshule from the wrecked building, its long gray hair matted with blood. The Supreme Huntress didn't look much better, once glittering robes soiled with gore from the victims, her regal face streaked with dirt.
We must help,
she said, as the ground shook from another explosion.
No, the captain's right.
Chancellor So joined them, similarly disarrayed, the hem of her long dress ripped and torn where she had used the material for bandages.
What you have done is beyond our expectations, Ragasa. But my duty now must be to get you to safety. Don't you agree, Council Member?
Merrimus looked at Stellan expectantly as the Chancellor addressed him. Of course, he concurred. The bombing was proof that the danger was far from over. Would these devils never stop? As if to answer his question, long-range lasers lanced down from above, carving deep fissures into the ground. They swept toward the wrecked building, vaporizing anyone in their path.
Back into the walker!
Stellan shouted. Ilaric Jovet looked around in despair.
But the wounded!
Take who you can!
Stellan told her, drawing his lightsaber.
I'll protect those who are too injured to move.
As will I,
Merrimus said, his Kyavine already in his hand. Stellan shook his head.
No, Captain. I need you to protect the Ragasa and Chancellor So. Will you do that for me?
Merrimus held out an open hand.
You have my word, Lord Jedi.
The two men grasped each other's wrists.
Then I know they will be safe.
The sound of running boots broke the moment. Stellan turned to see a small band of Nihil charging at them, led by a Twi'lek with death in her eyes and a plasmol burning in her hands. Merrimus let loose a volley of blast from his Kyavine, hitting one of the Nihil in the shoulder. The brute, an unmasked Alzarian with a slack jaw, spun with the force of the blow, but somehow stayed on his feet.
It's their wretched drugs,
Merrimus snapped, as the Chancellor ushered everyone who could walk onto the walker.
The Tolagret don't know when to lie down and die!
Stellan didn't recognize the Togruti word, but could guess its meaning.
We're all on board!
So shouted down from the walker. Stellan reached for Kant's saber, igniting both weapons.
Go, Captain! Get as many as you can to safety!
The Togruta hesitated for a minute before running to join his queen. But they weren't leaving Stellan alone to face the Nihil. The Chancellor's voice rang out from where she had taken up the controls herself.
Matari, Voru, stay with the Jedi. Protect him as he protects us.
The Targons obeyed their mistress without question, bounding from the walker to stand by Stellan. Matari to his left, Voru to his right. Stellan didn't look to the Chancellor to thank her or to see the experimental walker start to rise, but he was pleased to have the animals with him. With the Targons by his side, he just might survive the day. Elzar's Sandval keened as a laser bolt almost punched its way through her wing.
Steady, girl,
Elzar urged his mount, not taking his eyes off a Vector that was trying to shake off not one, but two Marauders. He could tell from the flight pattern that the pilot was inexperienced. The Wookiee Buriaga? It could be. And there was no sign of Nib. Force willing, she was still airborne. But even if she was, the Padawan needed help now. Buri was slewing left and right, doing his best to avoid being shot down, but could neither shake his assailants nor double back to go on the offensive.
Time to even the score. Get me nearer.
Elzar reached for his lightsaber as the Sandval's wings beat faster, pushing them toward the skirmish.
That's it. That's it.
He lit the blade.
Just a little closer.
A bomb whistled past them from above, the shock causing the Sandval to buck in the air, nearly throwing Elzar from her back. He pressed an open palm against the beast's neck.
Steady, girl. Steady.
The Sandval calmed, sweeping nearer to the firefight.
Nearer. Nearer.
Just near enough. Elzar drew back his arm and threw the lightsaber with all his might. The blade pinwheeled through the air like a plasma disc, Elzar guiding its flight so it dipped down into the path of the first fighter. The Nihil had no time to pull up. His mount howled in triumph as the spinning blade sliced through the fighter like a circular saw, the Marauder bursting into flames as plasma met fuel. The Sandball pulled up to sweep over the explosion, Elzar calling out in the Force to draw the now extinguished hilt back to him. He glanced down at the weapon, gratified that it showed no signs of damage, although the same couldn't be said for the second Nihil fighter, who suddenly found himself peppered by bolts from Buriaga's cannons. The Wookiee peeled away to find his master, although Elzar could feel the Padawan's gratitude and prepared himself for a bone-popping hug when all this was over.
Nice trick,
a voice came over the comm.
You'll have to teach me how to do that sometime.
Elzar looked back to see Ty coming up fast on their tail, her own Sandval panting heavily.
So you're my apprentice now?
He asked. Ty barked a sharp laugh.
You wish.
She brought her Sandval alongside him, and Elzar couldn't help but notice the blaster burns on the creature's side.
What happened to you?
He shouted across. Ty had peeled off not long after they had engaged the Nihil, Elzar losing her in the theater of war.
You asked whether the Sandvals fly in twos? Turns out it's threes.
There's another?
Ty's Sandval bucked beneath her.
Apparently these two are the babies. Mom was still out there, trapped by a bunch of Nihil in the middle of the crazy exhibit with creepy singing holograms.
Now it was Elzar's turn to laugh. United in Song was still playing, even through all of this. He hoped it had given the Nihil an earworm they would never forget.
But you got her out?
Ty patted her Sandval's neck.
This little fella came to Mama's help and took a bruising in the process, but he'll live.
Elzar scanned the skyline.
So where is she now?
Safe and sound with a group of Padawans. You'll be pleased to know the place is now crawling with Jedi. Never thought I'd be so glad to see it.
The Force provides the...
He began, before looking down to the ground.
What is it?
Ty asked, as Elzar clambered to his feet on his Sandval's back.
And what in Star's name are you doing?
You've handled the Mama. Reckon you can handle both kids at once?
He asked, igniting his lightsaber.
Do I have a choice?
No,
Elzar replied, and leapt into the air.
Chapter 53, The Unity Arc.
Stellan met the Nihil at a run, the Alzarian unleashing a torrent of fire from a bulky flamer. Stellan somersaulted over the gushing flame and came down in front of the raider, severing the weapon's barrel before bringing the pommel of his hilt up into the Alzarian's already damaged jaw. The reptilian stumbled back, his place in the skirmish taken by the Twi'lek wielding the plasmol, the weapon's energized hammer bouncing off Reyna Kant's blade. The Targons were already on two of her cohorts, Matari knocking the thug of a human to the ground, while Voru tackled the Weequay. Neither pirate would last long, their armor little use against a Targon's claws. That didn't stop the human from punching Matari in the face, a decision he soon regretted as the Chancellor's protector closed his jaws around the Nihil's throat. The Twi'lek, however, was a different proposition. While the others were little more than brutes, she fought with skill and precision, the heel of her plasmol slamming repeatedly against Stellan's twin blades. He had no time to check on the animals, but the scream that issued from beneath Voru told him that their enemy's number had been reduced by one more. He spun and blocked, kicked and jumped back, fighting two Nihil at once as the Alzarian rejoined the fray, snatching up a blaster from his fallen comrade. Neither would give ground, fighting with supernatural strength. Was it the Nihil's cocktail of drugs running through their veins? The Alzarian got too near, and Stellan punched him with the fist that wielded Kant's blade. A dirty move, but Stellan was exhausted. The reptilian staggered back, his finger locked around his trigger. Blaster shots raked the ground, Stellan avoiding losing his feet solely by jumping back. Recovering, the Alzarian brought up his weapon, only to holler in pain as Voru sank her claws into his wide back. The Alzarian landed on his face, Voru's full weight bearing down on him. Stellan turned to look for the woman, who had Targon trouble of her own. The red fur darkened around his mouth. Matari jumped, but the Twi'lek was quicker, swinging her maul at the animal's head. The hammer connected, and Stellan felt, rather than heard, the Targon go down. Voru abandoned the Alzarian to run to her brother's aid. But the Twi'lek leapt, using the Targon's back to propel herself at Stellan. He crossed his sabers to protect himself, but his arms were like lead. The Twi'lek's hammer struck the blades with the sound of a thunder crack, the force of the blow knocking both lightsabers down. Stellan toppled forward, overbalanced, and the Twi'lek brought the pole of her weapon up, catching him under the chin. Stellan tasted blood as he was flipped over by the impact, his lightsaber hilts clattering beside him as he hit the ground. If he had been capable of rational thought, he would have expected to feel the maul cracking his skull like an egg. But instead, he could only lie stunned. The world spun as he tried to push himself up, flashes of yellow and red streaking past him. He looked up, trying to focus. Matari and Voru were racing after the woman, who was running full pelt toward the lumbering walker. She was going after the others, going for the Ragasa and the Chancellor. All things being equal, Merimus would be able to take the woman. But what had been equal about today? Stellan pushed himself to his feet, not really sure what he expected to do before his legs gave out. He threw out an arm to break his fall, but it folded beneath him, unable to stop him thudding to his side. It was down to Matari and Voru now. Although the red Targon was wavering, still suffering the effect of the plasmol's blow, it didn't matter. Stellan smiled through bloodied teeth. The Twi'lek may have bested him, but she couldn't outrun one, let alone two Targons. And yet, as she neared the oh-so-slow walker, Stellan saw the woman pull a device from her belt. A weapon? No, a grappling hook that shot up toward the back of the REW.
It found its target, locking into place, and the Nihil flew up into the air, the cable retracting. The Targons leapt, but she was already out of range of their claws, speeding toward her victims, her plasmol gripped tight.
No!
Stellan cried out, as if his shout alone would be enough to bring her down. He crawled forward, desperate to save the people he'd pledged to protect. Desperate to do anything. Boots smacked down beside him, a finger breadth from his head. Was it the Alzarian, still jacked up on the stims, ready to finish him off? Stellan! Hands grabbed him, turning him over. A face swam into view. Elzar? Where had he come from? It didn't make sense. It also didn't matter.
Stop her,
he wheezed.
The Twi'lek. She's going for the Chancellor. For Agasa Ilaric.
Elzar took off at a sprint, pulling back his arm to launch his lightsaber into the air. The blade shone as it arced toward the REW, slicing through the Nihil's cable before she could reach the top of the walker. The Twi'lek dropped, releasing them all as she fell. Stellan didn't know if Elzar would get to her before the Targons took their revenge, but he knew it was finally over. The Chancellor and everyone on the walker was safe. Stellan could relax. As long as someone stopped that dreadful whistling that was coming from above. The bomb hit the ground between Elzar and the walker, and everything turned red.
Chapter 54, The Skies Above Valo.
The onslaught needed to be stopped, and Indira Stokes was the Jedi to do it. She'd almost died at the hands of the Nihil, and the Force had given her another chance, working through Elzar Mann. Now, she had to make it count. She was pushing her vector to the limit, and she wasn't alone. Nib Asik was with her to starboard, Buryaga to port, engines gunning, eyes fixed on their target. Behind the vectors, the last remaining Skyhawks struggled to keep up, their starfighters unable to match the Jedi's speed. The Nihil ships hung in the sky above them, circling an imposing battlecruiser that was almost beautiful in its brutality. The vectors were hideously outgunned, of course, even with Jedi at the controls. But among them, they would find a way to bring the Nihil down. They just had to.
We have incoming,
Chell informed Pan Ata aboard the Eligencia.
How many?
The Doerton grunted.
Three vectors and a handful of Skyhawks.
Pan snorted.
The remnants of the glorious Republic.
He thumbed a control, broadcasting to the fleet.
Continue the bombardment. These gnats are mine.
Indira's life was saved for the second time by a sudden stab of intuition. She pulled her yoke to the right, Nib swerving to avoid her. A barrage of turbo lasers streaked from the belly of the main Nihil ship, missing her port wings by millimeters. The Skyhawk that had been climbing behind her wasn't so lucky. The fighter burst into flames that were instantly extinguished in the weak oxygen, the wreckage tumbling back to Valo. Indira aimed at the cannon to return fire, but was still out of range. She needed to go faster. Pan grunted as the Jedi evaded his shot, although the destruction of the Skyhawk had been a worthy consolation. As the rest of the Tempest continued to shell the planet below, Pan switched from one cannon to another, scattering the attackers as they targeted the Eligencia's bombing bays.
Some chance.
He took out another Skyhawk with a blast from the Ventral Laser, only for the cannon to be obliterated by the lead vector.
Pan thudded a meaty fist down on the console.
Damn their eyes. Whoever that Jedi was, they deserved a fiery death, which he would be more than happy to provide.
Another charge dropped into the clouds. Indira reached out with the Force, trying to nudge the shell as it whistled down, shifting its course so it would splash into the lake. At least that was the plan. She would have no way of knowing if she'd succeeded until it plunged beneath the water. In the meantime, she would have to be content with making a difference up here. Indira turned her vector on its head, streaking across the battlecruiser's undercarriage. One of the ship's three bomb bays lay straight ahead. Indira could only imagine the Nihil at work, preparing another barrage. They would be disappointed. Indira raked the dreadnought's belly, the last few bolts finding their way through the open doors. Flames gouted from the bay as the bombs detonated in their cradles, the shockwave buffeting Indira's vector as she dropped into a sharp turn to stop herself from being immolated in the blast. The Elegantia shook violently as a chain reaction ripped through the lower decks. Pan swore, yelling for a damage report. It came back better than the quake had suggested, although there were numerous fires raging down below.
They'll pay for that,
he bellowed, spittle spraying from his thick lips.
Release the scav droids! Gut them like fish!
The first wave came out of nowhere, swarming out of hatches that sprang open along the cruiser's long keel. Hundreds of scav droids, manipulator arms grasping, dropping into the atmosphere like locusts. A Skyhawk was the first to fall prey to the robotic scavengers, laser cutters slicing through the starfighter's thin canopy. The small craft went into a spin, taking on another Skyhawk in the process. Only one of the Republic starfighters remained, and there was little the vectors could do. The Jedi just as vulnerable to the droid's advance. Buriaga mewed over the comm as Nib's vector all but disappeared under a mob of the metallic scavengers, although his master responded to the crisis with customary grit.
Steady yourself, Padawan. It'll take more than a few scavers to send me packing.
Indira felt a flutter in the Force as Nib used the energy field to strip the droids from her hull. Although the vector's thin skin showed numerous scars where the droids had already started to mine it for parts. Burry barked happily, but the celebrations were premature. A laser blast shot down from the main Nihil cruiser, slicing through Nib's already damaged wing. Her vector went into a tailspin, falling away.
Looks like I'm out,
Nib said, her canopy popping as she bailed out.
See you on the ground.
Indira felt concern radiate from Buriaga.
The Force will protect our Padawan. Stay with me.
The Wookiee responded, as any apprentice should, banishing his fears and dropping into position as they raced toward the next bay.
Oh, no you don't.
Pan growled as he saw the two vectors move in for the kill. Switching controls, he unleashed a barrage of laser bolts, laughing as the Jedi fighters were forced to peel off, scav droids locking on to their heat signatures. Chell was still worried, but Pan didn't care. He was having fun. One of the Jedi seemed more experienced than the other. He sent a command to the droids to focus on the lesser of the two pilots.
Always look for the weakest link,
he muttered as they latched on to the vector's hull. Burry was in trouble, and Indira knew it. The Wookiee just wasn't centered enough to scrape the scav droids from his vector's skin, as Nib had so ably demonstrated moments before. She reached out to calm him, but instead felt a warning from the Force. Lights were flashing on the back of each and every droid. Buriaga! Indira shouted, realizing in an instant what the commander of the dreadnought had planned. Push them away! Do it now! The urgency in her voice was the focus Buri needed. He pushed out with the Force, sending the droid spinning. But it was already too late. The scavengers exploded as one, the blast buffeting Buriaga's vector. Anyone else could be forgiven for thinking that the sudden destruction had been caused by Buri's actions. But Indira knew better. The Nihil commander had activated the scavenger's self-destruct, sacrificing the droids to take Buriaga with them. Indira's warning had saved the Wookiee, but he was out of the game, smoke belching from his engine. Get out of here, Padawan! She ordered him, gambling that his vector would make it to the ground. You've done enough! The Wookiee moaned over the comm as he dropped away. You too, Buri, she responded. We'll see each other soon. Whether that was true or not remained to be seen. Indira brought her vector about, flinching as the last Skyhawk dissolved into a blaze of superheated metal. She was on her own now. One Jedi against a Nihil fleet. So be it. There was no way she could get to the bomb bay. Not with a swarm of scav droids on her tail. She swung around, leading them a merry dance along the length of the ship, shooting past its nose out into the upper atmosphere. She pulled into a roll, coming about to face the mammoth warship, the scav droids perfectly matching the turn. Now, it was only a matter of time, seeing who could run faster. Indira opened her throttle, shooting headfirst toward the dreadnought, her laser cannons blazing hot. Force willing, she would land a direct hit to the Nihil flight deck. The other options were that she would be dismantled by the scav droids or reduced to atoms by the cruiser's battery. Either way, she'd always believed that one Jedi was all it took to make a difference. Now it was time to put her theory to the test.
Chapter 55, The Elegancia.
Jedi Vector coming right at us!
Chell Trambin yelled as the Elegancia's viewport lit up with laser fire.
Then that's how they'll die,
Pan said, locking on to the fighter. The Elegancia shook. Not from the Vector's attack, or the exploding ordnance in its belly, but from above.
What the hell was that?
Pan growled, grabbing hold of the console to stop himself being thrown to his own deck.
Ships arriving out of hyperspace, Tempest Runner!
Chell reported, shrilly checking his scope.
Multiple signals! At least 20 so far!
No!
Pan cursed, forgetting about the Vector and switching to a tactical view of space above them. A damn transmission must have got through. Reinforcements finally arriving. But from where? The Republic? The Jedi? Who? Indira had never seen ships so graceful. They weren't from the Order, or any Republic world. Their lines as refined as the shuttle that had made the journey from Shili the day before. A transmission came from the lead cruiser, which was already barraging the Nihil dreadnought.
Attention all fighters! This is Trido Tamari of the Royal Togruta fleet. Enemy craft must disengage or be destroyed. This is your first and final warning. We shall show no mercy.
Indira didn't doubt it. Suddenly, it was the Nihil who were outnumbered. More Togruta ships arriving with every passing second. An entire fleet! Opening a channel, she issued a response, never taking her eyes off the Nihil's flight deck as she raced forward. Togruta fleet! This is Indira Stokes of the Jedi Order.
The Force welcomes you to Valor. Now blow those junk heaps from the sky! Pan scrabbled for his command lounger. Damage reports streaming in from every ship that still functioned.
Should we respond?
Chell asked, the deck continuing to buck.
Only enough to get us out of here!
Pan barked back, opening a channel to what was left of his Tempest.
Oh, Nihil! The storm is past! Take the escape paths now!
Shall we cover the evacuation, sir?
What?
Protect the others while they leave!
What do you think we are? The Republic? Get us out of here!
The Morcerian swiveled back to his console, punching in coordinates as Pan sank back into his lounger. Reinforcements may have arrived to pull the Jedi from the fire, but they were too late. The strike, his strike, had been decisive. There would be no ignoring the Nihil now. There would be no ignoring him. The Eligentsia punched its way into the nearest path, leaving the rest of the Tempest to its fate.
Chapter 56, The Starlight Pavilion.
Is it working?
Rill Dyro tapped the side of her implant. Static was filling a vid window only she could see. The Starlight Pavilion was still standing, more or less. Orbalin back in his containment suit, lengths of his robes tied around the gash where he had so spectacularly revealed his true viscous form. The Lamproid was still on the floor, now bound in a legendary artifact apparently known as the Lariat of Armistice, an unbreakable cord that dated from the days of the Mystic Nine, whenever that was. Rill had been amused when Orbalin couldn't resist giving yet another history lesson, as she had helped him secure the Nihil, and then the pavilion as a whole. First Stellan, and now Orbalin. These Jedi were true to type, a font of all knowledge, whatever the situation. Lin and Stellan must have been a real hit at Jedi parties. But there was no malice in her thoughts. Orbalin had saved her life. And as for Stellan, well, there was no telling if he was even still alive.
Can I help?
She shook her head. Orbalin had already repaired T9, stripping parts from a wrecked service droid, as well as helping her establish a wireless connection to the replay unit. Communications with the Republic had been reestablished, even if they were still patchy. Maybe something to do with the Togruta fleet. And Rill wanted to get footage back to Gonet as soon as possible. The galaxy needed to see what the Nihil had done.
Come on, T, she muttered under her breath. Come on.
She turned a dial, and the static gave way to a grainy image. T9's excited chatter scrolling over her heads-up display. No, excited wasn't right. The droid was overwhelmed. And she couldn't blame him.
What are you seeing?
Orbalin's question was almost lost beneath a distorted message from her producer back in the core.
We're getting it, Rill. Stars End. What's happened there?
Another voice crackled over the line. She realized she was listening to GoNet anchor Sign Spenning commenting over the footage, which was now being broadcast live to the galaxy.
Rill, can we come to you?
Live?
Yeah, we'll patch you in, audio only.
She nodded, realizing a second later that the producer couldn't see.
Sure,
she said, trying to hide the waver in her voice. She punched a control on the comm terminal, switching over to GoNet's frequency. A holoprojector whirred, beaming a flickering image against the storeroom's wall so Orbalin could see for himself. T9's pixelated footage was writ large in front of them, complete with GoNet's logo in the bottom corner, a ribbon of headlines scrolling beneath the imagery. Breaking. Republic Fair hit by unprecedented Nihil attack. Death toll rocketing.
Chancellor So's whereabouts unknown. Sine Spenning's smooth voice, grave and achingly professional, came over the speakers. Rill killed it so they didn't get feedback when she replied.
We are joined now by Gonet's very own Rill Dyro, who is on the scene. Rill, first things first, are you safe?
Rill tried to speak, but a lump formed in her throat as she stood transfixed by the footage of the wrecked park.
Rill, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Sorry, Sine, it's... well, it's been quite a day.
I'm sure it has. These pictures are devastating. Can you talk us through what we're seeing?
Talk them through? What was there to say? What was that old phrase? A hollow tells a thousand words? In this case, the hollow was nothing short of heartbreaking. A fleet of long beams had arrived, bringing more reinforcements, but on the ground, buildings were smashed, rubble strewn across broken walkways. Wrecked fighters lay in smoking craters, while the bodies were everywhere. Rill was talking, but had no idea if her words made any sense. She didn't want to be in here, little more than a spectator. She wanted to be out there, where it mattered, helping those who were trapped, or worse, the wounded and the lost lying in the dirt. As she talked, T9's cam focused on the image of a small child wandering the once glorious Republic Avenue. A stuffed toy clutched to his chest, tears rolling down grimy cheeks. A sob escaped Rill's throat. Orbelin's gloved hand appeared at her shoulder, a sense of calm radiating from the Jedi. She brushed it away. She didn't want to be calm. She wanted to experience the moment in all its rawness. She needed to experience it.
Rill?
Sine asked over the calm.
Do you need to take a minute?
She brushed a tear away. No, I'm good.
We would totally understand. I cannot imagine the trauma you must have endured.
Really? I want people to see this. I want them to know what it's like.
Of course. And what of the Jedi?
What about them?
We've yet to see any evidence of them at work on the footage. Are they...
One's here with me right now. Archivist Orbelin of Starlight Beacon. He saved my life. The Jedi fought bravely to keep everyone as safe as they could.
Ah, yes,
Sine interrupted. Safe from his studio, half a galaxy away.
We can see some now. An Akruki and a Mirialan. Do you know their names?
She said that she didn't. Apologizing, as if it were important when what really mattered was what was unfurling on screen. The Jedi attempting to pull an unmoving Gungan from a collapsed ride. Who cared what the Jedi were called? The important thing was that they were here, trying to hold back the horror.
And what do you say to those who are already saying that the fair should never have gone ahead?
Sine asked.
That the Senate was warned of the danger before the festivities began. As we speak, Senator Tia Toon of Sullust has issued a statement that reads...
But Rill wasn't listening. T9 had picked up chatter on the droid channels. A worrying rumor.
If I could stop you there, Sine... I'm receiving reports that Chancellor Lena So has been found. Our cam is on the way.
Spenning immediately picked up the commentary for their viewers, informing them once again that the Chancellor hadn't been seen since an attack on the Opera House. All the time, T9 whizzed across the park, his cam picking up the twisted remains of a downed walker. Bodies were scattered around, some moving, some ominously still. Sine continued to babble in Rill's ear.
These are remarkable scenes. Can you confirm that we are seeing Ragasa Ilaric Yovet, Queen of the Togruta?
That was obvious, wasn't it?
The woman's Montrals were instantly recognizable, but still Sine kept asking banal questions as if the pictures didn't speak for themselves. The Supreme Huntress was standing in a cluster of people, one of her royal guards by her side. Nearby, another Jedi wearing dark robes, the master they called Elzar Man, was helping the wounded. But T9 had zeroed in on a figure kneeling on the floor, cradling a body. The Chancellor's Targon standing guard.
Oh, stars,
Sine said, actually sounding as if he had been caught off guard for once in his glittering career.
Is that? Surely it can't be.
But it was, and Rill felt as if her heart had been ripped out.
Chapter 57, The Unity Arc.
Somewhere in the back of his mind, Stellan knew the galaxy was watching. He could hear the whine of the camdroids, almost feel their lenses closing in, picking up every scrap of dirt on his robes, the injuries on his face, the tears in his eyes. Jedi weren't supposed to cry. They were supposed to keep their emotions in check. But weren't they also supposed to feel compassion for those in pain? For light and life. For light and... Stellan heard a whimper, but didn't realize it was his own. There was no avoiding the suffering of those whose lives had been torn apart. No avoiding their pain. If he could, if the anguish and the misery didn't cut him to the quick, then what kind of Jedi would he be? People were racing toward him. Togruta military, direct from Sheely, running toward their queen. There were others, too. Medics, both Republic and Jedi, led by a Jedi Knight he knew but couldn't place right now. A Shagrian, clutching a med pack. And then there was Bell and his Charhound, chasing after a young teenage boy who was racing full pelt toward Stellan, yelling one heartbreaking word.
Mom!
Kitrep So crashed down on his knees in front of Stellan. In front of his mother, who was lying limp in Stellan's arms. No one would blame Kip for his tears. No one would blame him for his grief. He wasn't a Jedi. He was just a son, fearing for a mother who might already be dead. Matari and Voru padded around to the teenager, nuzzling into him. Kip buried himself into the Targon's fur, sobbing openly, and Stellan wept with him.
Chapter 58, Grizzle. The camp on Grizzle reverberated to the sound of blasters fired repeatedly into the sky. Pan strode through the throng that had gathered outside the main complex. He would have rather been at the Great Hall in the depths of no space. But actually, there was something satisfying coming back to this varp heap of a planet after the success of the raid. He had led the largest Nihil attack in their long and torturous history. Pan Ata, not Marcion Roe, for all his brave words about Lena So. While Pan had rained terror upon the Republic, how exactly had the so-called I whiled away his time? By skulking in his relic of a ship on a rain-drenched world as far from the action as you could get? Who would the Nihil listen to now? Who would lead the storm? Roe thought he had secured his position by ordering the assault on Vallo. But all he had done was play into Pan's hands. Even Zitar looked impressed as Pan swaggered toward the main doors,
the Talpini having emerged from the building without his ridiculous power suit. A sign of respect? Of submission, maybe?
Perhaps Zeet wasn't as big a fool as Pan had thought. Pan smiled, slowly turning on his heels before disappearing into the building to meet with Ro. He wanted to savor this moment, to soak up the admiration of the assembled Tempests, to see the reverence in their faces, for them to see the strength in his. He stood, arms stretched wide, chest heaving with pride. As the blasters fired, Pan threw back his head and bellowed three simple but victorious words. Once Rose, but now forever his.
The storm triumphant!
The Nihil responded with a collective roar, the jubilant shouts intensifying. Some of the crowd had been with him in the attack. Others had heard about it from afar. But all were united behind the Tempest Runner who had secured the victory.
The storm triumphant indeed.
Pan turned at the voice. Ro stood in the doorway of the building, in full regalia, his father's ragged cloak flowing in the wind, Aratan wolfskin around his shoulders, that damned cyclopean helm replacing the one that Pan had reduced to scrap metal.
Ro,
Pan said in welcome, eyes narrowed, waiting to see how the eye would respond.
Tempest Runner,
Ro exclaimed, clapping Pan's arm, his voice amplified by his helmet. At least that explained why the fool was wearing it, so everyone could hear. But as for the hand on his arm, it was all Pan could do not to snap the man's arm. Who did Ro think he was? The two of them weren't compatriots. They weren't even comrades in arms. Pan had no need for Ro anymore. And yet the eye continued, turning to address the assembled horde like a damn politician.
We congratulate you all on your victory. Today marks the beginning of a new reality. Never again will the Republic underestimate us. Never again will they consider themselves beyond our touch. Their power is a lie. The Jedi are a lie.
He thudded his chest with a gloved fist.
This is our time. Yes, we lost many in the attack, and we honor their sacrifice. But we have gained so much. Tonight we drink. Tonight we celebrate. Tonight, we are Nihil!
Another cheer of approval erupted all around, but Pan rankled where he stood. They had lost many. They had lost some, that was true, as was to be expected. But Ro was playing a dangerous game. After everything Pan had done, after everything he had achieved, Ro dared to undermine his success? If there had been losses, they were from Lorna D's ground forces, not from the Tempest in the air. That was a point. Where was Lorna? Pan could see some of her legion among the throng, but the Tempest Runner herself was not among them. Nor had her ship been in orbit when the Eligencia had arrived. He turned, as if alerted by a sixth sense, to see her in the shadows of the doorway. Realizing she had been spotted, she hobbled out. Like Pan, she wore no helmet, although unlike the Doatin, she had obviously suffered on Valo's surface. There was a pronounced limp in her gait, and her face was heavily bruised. Most of the cuts had already scabbed over, although the vivid burn down her right cheek would take longer to heal. It didn't look like a blaster burn, or even that of a lightsaber. Fire from the carpet bombs? It was a definite possibility if the fury in her eyes was anything to go by. Fury that was at this moment directed at him. Pan tried not to let the others see him tense, ready for an attack he was sure was about to come. And yet the Tempest Runner merely fell in beside Ro and addressed Pan with the cold emptiness of a starless sky.
Congratulations, Pan.
He nodded, still cautious.
And to you, Lorna.
She turned to the crowd, not needing an amplifier to make herself heard.
The eye is right. We will feast, and we will honor those who fell on the path to our victory. And then we shall avenge them.
Again, the Nihil cheered, Ro raising his arms once more and declaring that the revels should begin. Pan would enjoy them soon enough, albeit back on his ship where he could celebrate in luxury. But for now, they had matters to discuss.
We should talk,
he told the Eye, who inclined his head.
Of course. Shall we go inside?
They gathered in a temporary hall Ro had established, a tactical slab stolen from a Mon Calamari cruiser set up at the far end. Ro walked around the table and glanced down at the star map on its surface.
Aren't you gonna take that off?
Pan rumbled as he stalked over to join him. Ro looked up.
What?
Pan pointed at the helmet.
Take it off.
Why?
Because I say so.
And I have to do what you say?
Pan slammed a fist down on the table, cracking the display.
Damn right you do. That victory you described, that was us. Not you, Lorna and me.
Ro cocked his head.
What about Zetar?
Pan growled beneath his breath.
He played his part.
But I didn't.
The other Tempest Runners were infuriatingly quiet. So be it. This was Pan's moment after all.
Very well. You can hide behind that mask as much as you want. But I want to know what happens now.
Ro spread his hands.
You heard it yourself. Now we party.
Not good enough. We've done what we said we'd do. We've established our reputation now and for all time.
At great sacrifice,
Lorna added. Pan stabbed at the star map with a finger, pointing at Coruscant.
Yeah, but they don't know that, do they? They're scared.
Ro stared straight at him, that damn red light shining in Pan's eyes, forcing him to squint.
And what would you have us do?
Pan snorted. Wasn't that obvious?
We strike now, and we strike fast. We show them that there's no respite, no time to lick their wounds. We hit them again, where it hurts, letting them know we mean business.
Lorna was studying him intently.
Where do you suggest?
Pan searched the map, indicating the first target on his list.
Here!
Ro barely even looked down.
The Cyclore Yards? We've talked about this before.
Yes, before Valo, when they thought they had driven us back.
But we proved them wrong,
Lorna said coolly.
You proved them wrong.
Pan wanted to slam her irritating face into the table.
That was one cloud! Now we return as Legion. Not just to smash, but to do what we do best. To take what is ours by right of conquest! We thought too small with the Innovator. Do you know how many ships are in that yard? How many ships that could be ours?
Lorna crossed her arms, looking down at the display.
It's an interesting target, but is it ambitious enough?
How so?
Zitar asked.
Cyclor is important to the Midrim, yes?
To the entire Republic,
Pan reminded her.
Again, I don't disagree. But eating the Republic fair was a hugely symbolic act. I suggest we need something equally momentous, equally devastating.
Such as?
She jabbed a finger at the edge of the board, Pan's eyes going wide when he saw where she was pointing.
It's all prime?
The Twilight looked him straight in the eye.
We've already shown that the Jedi can bleed. Why not break them altogether? Erase the scene of their greatest triumph. Prove to the galaxy that their Jedi cannot protect them.
Pan grinned. His pulse was racing, his adrenaline at a peak. He'd suspected a challenge from Lorna. Not that she would throw herself behind his plans with such vigor.
I like it. You would certainly send a message.
And where next?
Ro asked, his voice low.
Alderaan, Chandrila, Coruscant.
Why not?
Because it is suicide.
Pan couldn't believe what he was hearing.
How can you say that?
Because, unlike you, I see the bigger picture.
Ro was circling the table now, coming around to face Pan.
You did great work, all of you. But forcing the Republic's hand is a mistake.
Force their hand? We've laid them wide open.
And they are hurting. My source within the Senate tells me that an emergency session has been called. Blame is being applied. The Chancellor is on her deathbed.
Yes,
Lorna spat.
And the bomb that hit your walker nearly killed me. I saw her roll before I got away. I doubt anyone could survive that.
You did,
Ro pointed out.
I'm hard to kill.
And that's what makes us better,
Pan snarled, turning on Ro, who was now standing beside him.
You see that, don't you, Ro? We wanted Lena so dead.
We wanted the Republic to realize the threat we pose,
Ro snapped.
We wanted them to realize that their so-called spirit of unity is a lie. And we've done it. Now, no one on the frontier will sleep soundly. No one will think the Jedi can help.
Then we should strike.
No. You should listen.
Pan didn't know that Ro could move so quickly. The Eye's arm shot up, and a yellow lightsaber appeared at Pan's throat. The blade so close, he felt his skin burn. Big mistake. Huge mistake. Pan struck, grabbing Ro's arm and slamming it into the table, the glass cracking with the impact. That would have been the end of it. Should have been the end of it. If Ro hadn't swung up with his other hand and jabbed... What? A needle into Pan's neck? Pan staggered back, his hand pressed tight over the puncture wound. He looked down, seeing some kind of device sliding back into Ro's sleeve. An injector on a tiny mechanical arm. Pan tried to speak, to demand to know what the crick Ro had just stuck him with. But no words came. His throat was too tight. His vision blurred.
He sat, his weight suddenly too much for his legs to bear. His head bounced off the side of the table as he collapsed, but he hardly felt the pain against the fire that burned through his veins. All the time, Ro was speaking, his words echoing as Pan's muscles started to shake.
You see, this is your problem, Pan,
Ro said, pointing at him with the lightsaber.
You're so quick to respond that you never see the real attack coming. We started a war today, and you can be sure that there'll be a response. But the Republic doesn't know where we are. The Tempests need to scatter, to rebuild, while fear and paranoia spread like a plague from one end of the galaxy to the other.
Ro extinguished the weapon and returned it to his belt.
The Republic will tear itself apart. And then, when I say, we will reap the harvest. But you, Pan, with your ambition and your thirst for glory.
Ro's fist came down across Pan's face, a hit for every word.
You will not see it!
Pan tried to gasp as the onslaught ended, but couldn't draw breath. The voices he heard seemed a million kilometers away, but he clung to them, even though he could barely tell them apart.
Go start the revels. I will be on the gaze.
Pan didn't hear Ro leave. He was already blind. He knew what this would look like when his body was eventually found. They'd say he overindulged, took one too many stims. It's what he would do. Ro had taken it all from him. Pan's victory. His victory. And there was no way to make the bastard pay. Was there? Pan heard a hiss, felt a scratch cool against his skin. The pain subsided, like a lowering tide, only to return as his starved lungs gasped for breath. The world came back into focus, colors bursting in front of eyes that could see again. The thump, thump, thump of distant wreckpunk threatening to split his skull in two. Someone was in front of him. Pan snatched out a hand, grabbing a thin but powerful arm. An empty hypo clattered to the floor. Pan looked up and saw long Leku and cold eyes. Lorna. He released her arm, but she didn't wince, even though bruises were already forming where he'd gripped her.
You saved me,
he croaked.
Should I regret it?
Pan pushed himself up, willing the hall to stop spinning.
I should have known he had something up his sleeve.
Pan coughed, his lungs aching.
And you, for that matter. Did you know what he was planning?
No. Not at all.
But you had an antidote?
Lorna drew a vial from her pocket and shook it.
Sip on it. Extracted from the Bibfort males back on Ryloth. It's a general antitoxin. You got lucky.
Pan leaned heavily on the display table.
I don't feel it. Where's the tall peony?
Enjoying himself.
And Ro?
The name was like bile in his mouth.
On his ship. No doubt doing the same. He thinks you're dead.
Pan clutched the edge of the table, dragging himself up.
Then I'll rip that antique apart to prove him wrong!
No.
Lorna put a hand on his arm, her palm cool against his skin that still burned from the poison.
You know what he's like. He never joins the revels. He'll be up there until the party burns out. And when he finally shows his face, it will be too late.
Too late for what?
For him.
Lorna grabbed his face, holding it between her hands to stare into his eyes.
He wasn't there, Pan. On the ground. Neither was Sitar, for that matter. They didn't feel what it was like. The power. We have the Republic on the run. You were right. Roy isn't thinking big enough. Not anymore. I say we keep going.
Strike now?
And strike fast. We give it a day, maybe two. See where the Republic shores up its defenses. The shipyard? Or Hetzal's Bacta fields? And then, whichever is weakest.
Is ours.
Lorna pressed her lips hard against his. It was like kissing a viper.
You rest,
she said, when she finally broke away from him.
Let the Sipinid do its work. I'll start spreading the news. The Nihil belong to us now.
And if Sitar doesn't agree?
She smiled, showing teeth filed into points.
He's not wearing that armor anymore, is he? I've always thought that three Tempest Runners was one too many.
Chapter 59, The Communion Chamber, Valo.
The Jedi Council was in session, as was right and proper, considering what had happened. But it was also the last place Stellan wanted to be. Outside the nearly completed Jedi outpost, the relief work was well underway. Medical and support ships had arrived from the Corps, and the large majority of Jedi were on the streets of Lonissa, securing buildings and tending to survivors. The outpost itself had become the center of the relief effort. The Republic Administration Building had been hit in the final attack, and while it was still standing, had been decreed structurally unsafe. What remained of Samira Rayun's staff had been transferred to the temple and were doing their best to help folk get home when most of the transports in the spaceport had been destroyed. The job hadn't been expected of them. Samira and her team had simply taken the initiative, volunteering to oversee the cleanup.
Is there word from Starlight?
The question snapped Stellan back to the here and now. It had been spoken by Keaton Murag, another relatively new member of the Council who had been elevated just prior to the Great Disaster.
Yes,
Grandmaster Vitor responded.
Although Marshal Kriss is still engaged at Myluta.
Along with half the Jedi in the sector, it seems.
Terry Rosason, always a combative member of the Council, had already been critical of Eivar's handling of the Drengir affair, especially her alliance with the Hutts. Now she was positively scathing as news reached them that Eivar had summoned more Jedi than expected to support her assault on the Drengir's supposed root world.
Marshal Kriss seems to think she can do what she wishes, with or without the will of the Council.
Nonsense.
Yariel Poof, the long-necked Quirmian, interjected.
Master Kriss is operating well within the parameters we afforded her.
And in direct response to Chancellor So's request to deal with the Drengir threat as quickly and effectively as possible.
Master Adampo pointed out, the Yarkora joining the conversation for the first time since the Holo Conference began. Master Rosason made a response, but her words were lost in static. The Council's images scrambling for a moment. Communication lines had largely been restored, but the wider network was struggling to cope with the sheer amount of data beaming back and forth from Vallow. At this rate, Stellan was surprised no one had suggested breaking out the antique courier droids the Republic had used in their first push for the frontier a century or so before. The Master's hollows swam back onto the walls. Yariel caught mid-sentence.
Besides, Master Chris had no way of knowing what was happening on Vallow. None of us did, until the reporter's message got through.
Rosason tutted.
Can you imagine what would have happened if the Togrutas hadn't responded?
But they did. Republic longbeams close behind.
Stellan's tone was more forceful than he'd intended, but had the gratifying effect of shutting up Rosason, at least for a moment. Pra Tree Veter regarded him with concern over the Hollow Channel.
Master Geos, are you sure you shouldn't rest? Your injuries
are not as bad as they look, thank you.
While that wasn't a lie, it wasn't exactly the whole truth either. Torben Buck had wanted to plunge him into a back-to-bath, but instead, Stellan had pulled rank, opting for simple rejuve washes instead. A medical droid had closed the larger cuts with micro-sutures, Buck warning him that the stitches might leave scars. Stellan waved the concerns away, insisting that the already depleted Bacta supplies be redirected to those who really needed them. As a Jedi, Stellan could look after himself, relying on the Force rather than stims that could dull his senses.
What of the Nihil?
Grandmaster Veter asked. This was better. Stellan wanted to deal with facts, not recriminations.
Most escaped, he told the ancient Tarnab. The Valen Security Force does have a small number of Nihil prisoners, but most are in critical condition. However, Archivist Orbelin did manage to subdue one raider, a Lamproid by the name of Quinn Amarant. We have him in custody here in the outpost.
Veter's bushy eyebrows shot up.
You do?
At the request of Lera Breeza, who has assumed the position of acting chancellor while Lena So recovers.
The mention of her name took Stellan back to those